313-317-6540 or email us at holistic2010@peoplepc.com. We hope you are able to join us at this fantastic festival.
The time has come once again for another fantastic WHFR event. Join us Saturday, February 9th from 7 to 11 p.m. for WHFR's annual jazz benefit. It will be held at Andiamo's Restaurant at 21400 Michigan Avenue in Dearborn. This year's theme, the music of Mardi Gras, with special guest In the Tradition and Rosalind Sample Mosley. Admission is a donation of $5, which will help raise funds for WHFR. And don't forget to bring your appetite, because there will be a great pasta buffet for the low price of $10. So, mark that date on your calendar, February 9th, 7 p.m. at Andiamo's Restaurant in Dearborn for WHFR's annual jazz benefit. We'll see you there.
All jitterbugs. Monday, 1 till 4 p.m. is Swing Time. I'm Mr. White, your guide to a vintage vibe. Listen to the Swing Time Monday, 1 till 4 p.m. It's where swing is a thing and jive is alive.
Boogie!
You hear the rhythm romping.
Boogie!
You see the drummer stomping. Drum, boogie, drum, boogie.
Oh yeah, it's your boy T-Roy, Rep Your City 247 official. You are listening to 89.3 FM, the station making waves, and I host the Block Party every Friday, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., straight Michigan music, so make sure you tune in, listen to the boy on the radio, doing it in, right here at Henry Ford Community College, WHFR Dearborn. Nothing but the best, all independent music, 2 straight hours, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., because why? Because we got people, and we got music, WHFR Dearborn.
The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UFO reality. I'm David Twitchell, and you're listening to WHFR Dearborn. WHFR.fm is the station making waves, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO and abduction phenomenon. And our guest today is Mr. Rick Phillips. Rick is known as the Anomaly Man. He is an author, lecturer, paranormal experiencer, and hosts his own blog site, with the paranormal theme. He has been interviewed on numerous radio and web shows sharing his investigations, as well as his own personal experiences with the paranormal, to include his own close encounter UFO sighting in 1991. So I'm happy to welcome to the show Mr. Rick Phillips. How are you, Rick?
I'm fine, David, and thank you very much. I've always had a fond spot in my heart for Detroit. I grew up in Euclid, Ohio, and CKLW. Came across the lake and was my favorite and my friends' favorite stations in the late 60s.
Oh, yeah. Very good. Very good. CKLW, they still have the Coast to Coast show with all the paranormal stuff. You listen to that?
No, I don't.
Art Bell used to run it?
I guess. I know I would enjoy it, but my time frame's a little earlier than that.
Yeah, really. That comes out late at night. Art Bell used to host it.
Right. And now I'm familiar with it.
Yeah,
fully,
okay.
And I've heard it, of course, multiple times and follow blogging about it on a regular basis.
Right, right. Yeah, he has some pretty good guests on there, but too late at night for me. And
I was quite impressed with your list of people that you've interviewed over the years also.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, you went to the archives?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I know we were here to interview me, and I'm going to delight at doing that. But I'm certainly interested in some of the books that you've written, and I'd be delighted to comment and share my points of view, too.
That sounds great. Sounds great. See what we can do. So what originally got you interested in UFOs and the paranormal?
Oh, boy. Let's just take UFOs, I guess, mainly.
Okay.
I had my own experience in 1991. I have been a marketing researcher for my professional life. And at the time, I was doing radio stations' auditorium music tests, and I happened to be in Toledo, Ohio, for that matter, and had just finished up a thing for, if my memory serves me right, a top 40 station called WRQN at that time, and we had finished the auditorium test, and I was sitting with my clients until about midnight in the hotel that we hosted it at. And I needed to be back in Atlanta the next day, which is where I live. So I was kind of in a dilemma and didn't know whether I should really get a hotel or drive for a while and get a hotel or just drive all night or sleep on the road, which I very rarely did. But I decided to get on the road and headed to, I got down to the Kentucky rest station, and it was 4 a.m. or roughly that, and passed into a deep sleep. And the moment I woke up, probably at the end of a REM cycle, just as the daybreak was starting to come into the light of day, but not the sun up or anything like that, the rest stop was completely crowded. And the moment I opened my eyes, the words, along with the image, what kind of craft is that, came into my mind as I see a saucer shape, the absolute classic 1950s UFO about 200 feet away, maybe 75 feet in the air, going about 25 or 30 miles an hour. Silver disc-type craft that was about 30 feet in diameter. As I said, it was already moving. As upon the opening of my eyes, it was going out over a field in front of me. I knew I wasn't going to be able to see it for long. I didn't even really realize it was a UFO for maybe a second and a half, which gave it a chance to move even further away. It was in my sight for only about 15 seconds. I was watching it the entire period. At the very end of it going out over the tree line, I could also kind of almost see kind of a bluish type of tint or light, you know, as far as one additional feature of it at the very top of it. But what happened then, I think, is probably the most interesting thing, is that I expected, of course, all the cars in the place to, you know, start blowing their horns or going crazy. And evidently, and there was nobody out walking around going to the John or anything, which was unusual. And because it was just beginning to get light, as I said, and I just knew that if I didn't just start my car and drive back to Atlanta, that I wouldn't believe it. So I just started my car and drove back to Atlanta. But immediately I began investigating and reading everything available in 1991 up until that point about UFOs. And eventually began blogging about it. I now have over 700 blog posts on my my blog called UFO Disclosure Countdown Clock, and probably the only real blog, in a sense, that really tries to just follow things on a one-time, one-thing-a-day type of ongoing basis, with a, you know, a chance to go back and look at issues and events and so forth.
All right. Now you say that this rest stop was filled with cars.
Absolutely.
And there was no one out and about?
Nobody out and about. I mean, that in itself is dubious, but nobody was out and about. Now, again, I don't even know if anybody was necessarily, if they would have been walking another way, they would have even seen this thing.
Right.
But I mean, it was remarkable.
Yeah. But still, you hear other stories where people are driving down what is normally a highway that is normally filled with cars, and when they see this UFO, there's absolutely no cars on the road except their own.
Right. Going it's kind in of either, the high strangeness effect.
Yeah, going in either direction. And, you know, it sounds, as you say, dubious, but at the same time, you hear it again and again and again.
Right.
And
I think the fact that it changed my behavior. I mean, this wasn't an imagination thing. You know, I immediately became, you know, almost obsessed with reading about all of it. I will say that I was kind of shocked at the amount of purposeful disinformation that was out there.
Oh, really?
I was shocked at what was being said to be the whole abduction phenomena, because I really hadn't been following it by any means up until that point. Read, of course, the Stryber books and so forth. As I said, I read everything back then. One of the things that I found most fascinating upon some of my book reading phase of the whole deal was about Dr. Greer's statement in his book, his one disclosure book about the Phoenix Lights. Okay. And his claim, I would say, without solid proof, that he was on a flight landing in Phoenix on that evening and had been, you know, in communication, supposedly, that something was going to happen spectacularly. I'd certainly like to see that airline ticket.
He was in I haven't heard this story, so he was in communication with what? In communication with what? With who?
I guess, you know, with the beings that he claims to, to telepathically, you know, produce in front of himself.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I'll give you the fact that there's a lot of high strangeness associated with this. And I admire Dr. Greer, Stephen Greer, for getting the Disclosure Project together and getting all of these people...
Correct.
Insiders to come forward and everything. But then Dr. Greer turns from a coordinator of whistleblowers into a experiencer, you know, and it's just, see, if what he's saying about himself is true and his experience is true, he's a very important person. Now, is he a very important person, or does he think he's a very important person?
Right. Well, what I would say is, if indeed, because I'm waiting for the proof. I've said it in my blog. I've said it elsewhere. I've said it on these podcasts.
All right.
If he has a ticket, an airline ticket, into, you know, on March 13th, 1997, into Phoenix, that would be pretty good for me.
Or some
his name.
Some kind
I
of.
I haven't seen that.
You know, I don't keep my airline tickets when I get I get off the plane, I dump them. You know,
I'm with you.
You know, I'm
not saying that that's an absolute requirement.
Yeah.
But I mean, that would be certainly very compelling evidence for me.
Hmm. Yeah.
If he could show that, but I know that one thing that I'd like to talk about with your readers, with your listeners today is. The thing that you had mentioned, actually, in our private communications, just that you would like to talk about orb callers and so forth.
Oh, yeah.
You want to get into that a little bit?
Yeah. I've got that on my list of questions to hit you up with here. But
sure. Oh, I'm more than happy to follow your script there.
Well,
no problem.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's not really a script. I mean, sometimes we just get talking, and I got a dozen questions that never get asked because we run out of time.
Oh, I'm with you. You know, I have pages of material to cover, and I end up covering a third of it, if that.
That's right. But what I wanted to ask you about while we're on this subject of your personal experiences, you had a missing time experience with two other individuals in 1986. Tell our listeners about that.
All right. As I said, I'm a marketing researcher, and I had just conducted a focus group facility. These are the focus groups where you have, you know, one-way mirrors and clients sitting behind the walls and everything. It was one of my few political endeavors, and I was doing a group of what were called soft Democrats. These are people who leaned Democrats but, you know, had an open mind towards Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
I just finished hosting this event, and it was late at night. We had already done two focus groups. It was probably about 11. We were sitting around talking. I had a coworker who was a longtime, lifelong friend of mine, actually, since college, who was working with me and for me at the time, and he is a professional juggler. And he had been hanging out in Atlanta, living at my place for a couple months. And he goes, hey, we can go over to the Blues Harbor here in Atlanta. And I know the people there. We can get in and catch the last two sets. And, I know this one waitress over there. And, let's go on over. So I went over to the Blues Harbor. And at the end of the first set, The waitress comes up, and she evidently lived fairly close to the bar. At least that's what the assumption was. And we were going to, I assume in this day and age I'm allowed to say things like this, but we were going to head over to her place and smoke a joint. And so we literally left the bar. We know she has no more time than her break. I mean, this is the band's break.
Mm-hmm.
We head to my car. This is all. My office was within 150 yards of the bar.
Yeah, band's break is about.
We head to my car.
Yeah.
We get in it, and now, David, here's where things really, really start getting weird. I've lived in Atlanta since 1977. This was in 1986. And even by 1986, Atlanta had on their main street, which is called Peachtree Street, there were no homes on Peachtree Street. All right? It was all developed all the way, out 10, 12, 15 miles already.
Mm-hmm.
We head out of my car, and she's taking me. Now, understand that I have driven this area for 9 years. I only lived 3 miles from there. We headed towards my home. I don't even know where I am. I was confused.
Hmm.
We get to supposedly her place, and we go in, and we roll a number, and she gets on the piano, and she had a piano in her place, and starts playing a little piano as we're smoking, and we realize that, it's probably, time to go back, and we simply leave the location, get back in the car, begin driving down Peachtree. We pull into the front of the bar, and we notice that everybody's outside of the bar. And we don't even understand what's going on. We're kind of working our way through because we believe there's, of course, one more set going on. And right at the door, and I mean right at the door, the waitress is met by the other waitress. And she is furious beyond belief.
Hmm.
How could you do that to me? Just going crazy. And, that we had missed an entire set. It had about, again, the very typical missing time experience.
All right.
About an hour and 15 or an hour and 20 minutes.
Hmm.
In fact, at a later time on my blog called The Heavy Stuff, I wrote a blog post called The Missing Space of missing time experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So, David, our experience, my experience, and all three of our experience, was an absolute contiguous temporal flow that had absolutely no breaks other than my temporary disorientation upon leaving and supposedly going to her location.
Okay, so this disorientation, you're saying, should not have occurred. You hadn't been drinking?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, okay.
We had just come from working, and I don't drink, to be honest with you.
Okay.
So, I was just in the bar listening to the blues.
But you do the doobie.
Yeah, do the doobie.
Doobie doobie? Scooby doobie?
An advocate for 40 years, in fact. Don't get me started.
Okay. Well, we'll just say you have glaucoma.
I do not have glaucoma, correct.
At any rate. But you know, there are people out there is going to say, oh, well, he was smoking a joint, of course, you know,
right.
He lost track of time and yada, yada. Well, I have never had that experience, so I don't know. I have had one too many beers when I was young and dumb. So, and, you know, people say, oh, he was drunk. That's why. I don't care how drunk you get. You know, like there was a guy in MUFON that always said, you don't get drunk and see UFOs. You see UFOs, then you go get drunk.
I also kind of, I've written a blog post in the past, the strange, you know, there's high strangeness and there's strange highness. So, neither's to be discounted totally, especially when we're talking about the way our perceptions are formed.
I hear you. Okay. We're going to get back into that, but right now I've got to take just a moment to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, 89.3 FM on your radio, and WHFR.FM on your computer. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with blogger and author Rick Phillips. We're talking about his personal experience with UFO sighting and missing time. Now, whether that was under the duress of the doobie, I don't know. Tell me, could that be possible?
One more time, please.
Could your missing time experience have anything to do with smoking a little marijuana?
Not in my personal opinion.
Okay.
It was, if that had been my first time, maybe I might have thought that. But by that point, I guess it would probably be about my 20,000th time.
So you could.
It wasn't even a particularly memorable experience, to be honest with you.
So, you know, a break, you're talking about the break of the band. The band was taking a break, right?
Correct.
Okay, so that's, if I recall, about 20 minutes?
Yeah, we knew we had about 15 or 20 minutes.
15, 20 minutes.
To get away, and that's literally what we thought we had accomplished.
Yeah, okay, so when you headed back, you thought we're going to make it in time, right?
We thought, yeah, right on 15, 20 minutes.
And yet, an hour and 20?
And it was about an hour and 35 minutes, or an hour and 40 minutes.
And how many were involved in that?
My buddy, a person named John Flower, professional juggler, and a waitress who I did not know.
So there are three
people. Did know her, however, from previous juggling experiences at the Blues Harbor.
I see. So there's the three of you, and did you discuss this afterward? Did you say, well, do you remember what happened? Or?
Oh, as far as John and I go, we have remained very close friends for the entire time frame afterwards, and I've never, of course, spoken with the waitress again or in any moment or anything like that, neither had John. In fact, I used to put together a little promotional piece that had all kinds of stuff also involved with it for a group of card players that I've been associated with for 40 years, and I had him write up his experience separate from mine, which I also wrote up separate, you know, with neither of us looking at each other's accounts. And this was only a few years after the event, and it was interesting. He is a very big Gurdjieff Ospensky person, and it just so happens that on our trip back from the girl's apartment, that he used one of those 15-syllable words that Gurdjieff used to use to make up concepts. And he's always joked also that this high strangeness occurred when that occurred. I've had actually one other beyond high strangeness event with him, and it was really after we spent a very long time talking about our missing time experience. And as far as I'm concerned, a lot of these anomalous phenomena seem to occur when you beckon the unknown, which is what I call it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think that's a lot which is involved in the Bigfoot phenomena.
Okay. Yeah, and now one could say, okay, you're going into this expect. For example, Ouija boards, for example. They say don't mess with a Ouija board because you're opening doors or windows, whatever, into another dimension that you may not be able to close and anything can come in, yada, yada, yada. But you're also, the skeptic will say, you're psyching yourself up. You're sitting down there at the Ouija board expecting something to come through, expecting possibly to see a spirit, whatever. And so whatever you experience or think you experienced was all in your mind because you were psyching yourself up. Is that a possibility are you really opening doors?
Well, first of all, I would say, of course, that's possible.
Mm-hmm.
But what I have a very interesting take, in my opinion, on, I don't like to use the word dimensionality. And here's why. There's a renegade physicist called Julian Barber. He wrote a book called The End of Time.
Mm-hmm.
And without getting too heavy, what it really is saying is that everything is a space. And I mean everything. Your thoughts, objects, etc.
Mm.
Not only are they spaces, they're spaces that are defined by the information that's within them, whether it's DNA or the electrons or whatever.
Right.
Phenomenologists, which is what I actually consider myself, are very concerned with the way things actualize into our just past. And the way I like to talk about that is to really just talk about how we don't know what our humanness is. And the way I like to begin to describe that, if I have a moment, is that our space as a human being right at this moment is going at a rate of velocity that is so beyond your belief, and I'll just take you through the four levels right now. We're, of course, on a planet that is turning at about 1,000 miles an hour. We're on a planet that is going around a sun at about 60,000 miles per hour. We have a sun that's going around the Milky Way at about 500,000 miles per hour. And our patch of the Milky Way, meaning the local galaxy group that we're within, is actually heading towards a group called the Great Attractor. It's a part of the universe that's about a third of the universe, of the observable universe.
All right.
And it's going at 14 million miles per hour. We literally are beings that are traveling at just slightly less than 1% the speed of light.
Hmm.
Now, in addition to that, because of the way physics is, we don't have access to the data points. It takes time or space for, the data to be processed into our brain for us to realize it. We are literally in a type of space that I call, or as Husserl called, I should say, it's a running off space. In other words, the only place that we're at a now point is within our own very being.
Hmm.
Everything that's outside of us is a just past. It's already occurred.
Right.
It's part of a structure. when you start talking about you're not part of the now point, you have a little wiggle room there. And what I like to call that wiggle room is that the space that we're in, as it runs off, becomes a different characteristic. It goes from what I call not able to be into an able to not be. And I think that this able to not be space, it's kind of a subspace of every now, is kind of a wraparound effect. And it even contains a lot of the same objects, of course. They're all running off like we are. Within that able to not be space, in my opinion, you know, belief, expectations, who knows? The non-local behavior is going on.
Right.
And occasionally it can, you know, spontaneously become a perceptual structure.
That is
so that's the way I kind of think about it.
That is heavy.
And the reason I think about it that way, David, is the UFO that I saw that went over the end of that hill,
right,
over the end of the, you there?
Yes.
Okay. That went over the end of the park there. Nobody else reported it. I mean, almost as if it is a temporal phenomena in my perception structure.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that feeling every single time I read a MUFON report about low hovering triangle crafts going over homes.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way that it wouldn't be reported for an extremely long distance. Even if it's 13, 15 individuals over a 5 or 6 mile area, even in the rural areas. So I'm more of the thought process that a lot of what's being reported of the ufology phenomena is indeed temporary phenomena. Let me give you what is, in my opinion, the very best example of it that you can find on the internet.
Hmm.
And it has to do with doppelgangers, and it has to do with two very particular people who have been seen as a doppelganger.
Doppelganger meaning a double.
Correct.
Yeah.
After their death. Now,
okay.
The example I'd like to talk about is Florida Eastern's flight, I think it was 431, and it crashed in the Everglades.
Right. I read the book on that, yeah.
About half were saved, half did not die, half died. It was called pilot error.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, if you read the accounts, these guys were really, you know, the pilots, one of them was completely not even the cockpit, and he was down below. I mean, he was totally out of position.
Mm-hmm.
These pilots, these Eastern pilots, this plane, when it crashed into the Everglades, for whatever reason, they reused parts of it. On the planes that they reused some of these parts of this crashed airplane, on multiple occasions, the pilots reappeared in two forms. One, as themselves, as human beings, sitting in a seat at 35,000 feet, going 400 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
The other, they appeared in miniature form in the microwaves on deck, on board.
In microwaves now.
In the microwave. As a little miniature human being.
In the microwave oven?
Yes.
Okay.
So they were seen as real humans and as these miniaturized humans on different occasions, multiple occasions. Frank Gorman eventually forced the people to not talk about it anymore.
Hmm.
Now, here's how I tie that in. I say that these doppelgangers are beings who are in this able to not be space. The reason why they, and let me say that these people were seen, these doppelgangers were seen by people that knew them and who didn't know them.
Right.
But when they were confronted, they popped out of existence. And the reason for that, in my opinion, is the real reality we're in uses two types of space to form what I call the not able to not be. It's the what has to be. It's the actualized. It's what runs off. And that does not allow able to not be beings to continue to exist. In my opinion, it explains the Skinwalker Ranch experiences. These are able to not be phenomena, temporal things.
Able to not be.
Correct. It's a type of space, in my opinion.
Okay.
It's a runoff.
Now, are you saying that in the case of this crashed airliner, where parts of that crashed airliner were used on other planes, and a doppelganger, a double, or a ghost of one of these flight attendants who died in that crash appeared
with
on the
both pilots.
Right. Okay. Are you saying that they were not ghosts? They were not spirits of that discarnate entity?
No, I believe they are.
Okay. Now, we're calling them doppelgangers. That's what confused me.
Okay.
Are they ghosts or are they doubles?
That's how most people think about doppelgangers, is, you know, a double.
Right. But generally when I hear about doppelgangers, it's, you know, I appeared in some other city in, you know, in Paris or something.
Simultaneously,
when I know I was here in the living, still alive, in Michigan.
Right. Simultaneous coexistence.
Right. Now, that's a doppelganger.
You know, these would prove that it goes beyond that.
Yeah, right. I would say so.
So I'd like to think of the fact that these phenomena, or at least a lot of them, and David, I'm more than willing to... I personally, and again, as a market researcher, I'm extremely used to examining opposite points of view about the exact same object.
Mm-hmm.
I like to think that very few of the UFOs that are reported are truly craft,
right,
that have a phenomenological basis and do not slip in and out of the able to not be.
Right.
I think there are very, very few of those.
Right.
Now, with that acknowledgement, of course, there are things that are truly beyond belief, that either something nefarious is going on, the implants that people find in themselves. I had a great one on my blog this year on February 6th, where a Pennsylvania man in a MUFON report, maybe you saw it yourself, you know, showed that implant in the York, Pennsylvania Veterans Hospital.
I did not see that.
Oh,
was
great,
it in the journal?
Great one.
Was it in the journal?
Pardon me?
Was it in MUFON Journal?
No, I just pulled it literally off the latest report.
Oh, okay.
And I believe it was February 6th. I know it was in February.
All right.
I'm more than willing to acknowledge that there are things that are either nefarious or on a limited basis. You know, there may very well be a few, you know, are we talking about a couple hundred or a couple thousand crafts with aliens in them?
Right. But it only takes one to prove that they exist.
the old thing, right?
Right. It only takes one. Yeah. So let me take a break here so that I don't interrupt the next train of thought here, okay?
Sure, no
problem. And do my station ID and remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves here in beautiful Dearborn, Michigan, out of Henry Ford Community College. And you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with Rick Phillips, who's an author and blogger of the paranormal. And Rick, not to get off that subject, but I did want to get onto the subject of the summoning...
Me too.
Orbs, okay.
Absolutely.
We got Rick chafing at the bit to talk about this.
I am.
Okay. Now, what is this, like this Brother Yahweh and others who claim and have even shown... I've seen this Brother Yahweh on a local news station You know, and the reporter goes out there with the cameraman and whatever.
Oh, I assure you, that's part of my rap, I assure you.
Yeah, okay. And tell us about this guy and others that allegedly summon these UFOs or light orbs.
Well, let me, here's the way I like to talk about the background of that.
Hmm?
They did studies when we were children on areas where orbs were a common occurrence in isolated valleys.
Mm-hmm.
And even back in the 50s, it was known that these luminous entities seemed to be able to respond to human thoughts and communications.
Mm-hmm.
Now we're going to skip ahead. In 2004, via the internet, I became aware of at least a couple individuals in California who use nothing more than the ritual mythology of going out with their video camera, filming a portion of the sky, and virtually every time coming up with a light, luminous orb moving across the sky in the area where they were filming. This was in 2004. Now, 2005 was indeed the exact thing you're talking about. Prophet Yahweh, a former Atlantan here, out in Vegas, acting like a nutcase, you know, got the local Vegas TV station to come watch him call an orb.
Right.
They went out with the purpose, obviously, of making him look like an ass. And, of course, they looked like an ass when all of a sudden in the sky was either one or two orbs appeared to be chasing each other across the sky.
Right.
That kind of was the cat out of the bag. When I started blogging in 2007 on UFOs at UFO Disclosure Countdown Clock, I started searching for these type of people. And, David, I've identified about two dozen that I've featured over the last 5 years on my website at various times. Nearly all are male. Nearly probably 80% of them are religious. All of them are methodologically consistent in what they do, and they are incredibly successful at producing anywhere from, you know, 10 videos to multi-hundreds. I just featured a guy a couple weeks ago that had 206 of them. They
at
don't
one
appear
time?
To be able to call orbs forever. Almost all of them only seem to be able to do it for a while. However, I've identified two dozen of these folks, and earlier in the year, and that's how I'd like to talk about really the one of the very main cases of the year, I had a lady who, because of my coverage of orb callers, as I call them, really get into my blog, and she communicated with me probably 20 times before a particular event happened. And she was always sending me videos. I never used any of them on my blog. I was very kind, you know, I'd answer her and be courteous and so forth. I'd look at her stuff. She was of the opinion that she was able to set up her camera and somehow capture these faster-than-sight things, very similar to what you are probably aware of what happened in Denver.
Right, right, right.
Very recently. Now, I was much less than impressed with this faster-than-light stuff from her. That's why I never ran any of it.
Mm-hmm.
As I said, I never don't check what I put as a link on my site. However, she had already sent me like 20 things, and she sent this particular one through my blog into my comments section on March 20th or so, 23rd or so of this year. And on March 23rd, I just simply put it in my comments section. I didn't even look at it. And about a day or two later, I looked at this video that she had sent me, and I call it the feather orb video, and that's what she calls it, and my jaw dropped open. I had only ever seen one thing even remotely comparable to it, an Australian orb video. And what Pam, this woman's name is Pam Garcia, had captured was 43 seconds of after she had been involved in thinking light and love, and based on my website and all this kind of jazz, she had this thing come down. and move around her courtyard and then shoot up into the sky.
Really? How close was it to the ground? How close to the ground was it, or the cannon?
She probably captured it up about 30 feet up in the trees, and it came down to maybe about 4 feet off the ground. Her YouTube channel is Open UR Eyes 10. Open the letters UR, or your, Open Your Eyes 10. And you'll find it there. And so anyway, my jaw dropped open, and I mean, that's what she was trying to do.
I guess.
She produced an amazing thing. The Sci-Fi Channel, in fact, believe it or not, David, today the Sci-Fi Channel contacted me for a second time this year, just this morning. This is the UK version of it, evidently. And but anyway, the Sci-Fi Channel got involved with her, and for that matter, exchanging emails with me. I would be the commentator on this, supposedly. And I can give you a very great insight right this moment. The producer of the show, literally, and I have this in emails, said to Pam, listen, the producers don't really like the term orb, and, you know, they think of that as flecks of dust.
Right,
near,
right.
You know, because of lens infractions or
lens
problems.
Lens flares, yes.
And what we'd like you to say, now this is, understand they're saying this to a person who recorded this video.
Hmm.
We'd like you to say that it's a fairy.
Oh, really?
Because that we can sell a fairy. We can't sell an orb. Of which she writes to me, goes, what do you think of this? And I go, well, we're dealing with stupid.
Yes.
And why don't you just tell them that you rubbed a bottle and a genie came out? Exactly. So anyway, I literally copy and pasted that exact exchange with the Sci-Fi Channel earlier, and I sent it to another person today who had contacted me today about my personal paranormal experiences. And I said, if you want to get involved with me after this, I said, go ahead. I haven't heard back from him today, but that was this morning.
You did hear back from them?
No, I did not hear
back
from
them. Oh, you did not hear back from them.
After I contacted, after they sent me a contact this morning, and then I answered it with the copy and paste. Let me just expand one more time on this orb calling phenomenon. And we have a negative here also associated with this next guy, but there's a guy this year called Robert Bingham. Are you familiar with him by any chance?
No.
He's out in Los Angeles, seems to be a pretty common man. Seems to be about 50, 55, 60. I believe he's a hotel worker. And he has been meditating and praying in a particular manner for 8 years, I believe. And he says that he can call angels into the sky. Now, interestingly, of course, these angels look exactly like orbs. But that's what he believes he's calling.
Or fairies.
And he has done it in person, in public. In advance, meaning just like Prophet Yahweh, you know, on April 3rd, I'm going to go out, I'm going to call an orb, and I'm going to call angels into the sky.
Okay.
The only problem is what's a problem in ufology, especially in the last year and a half, in my opinion, and that is the UFO gathering sites. And the site that he went with, as far as trying to get his information out there, was called Third Phase of the Moon. I don't know if you're familiar with that,
but it's one of these
gathering sites. And the UFO gathering sites, all I can say is somebody's organized in a very disinformational way, and it's been a goal of somebody for at least a year and a half to produce, you know, fake orb, fake UFO videos. Simple as that.
Yeah.
Unattributed fake videos that they then distribute often to the very largest UFO sites. Now, I don't know if they're in cahoots or they don't bother checking their sources or they don't really have feelings about gathering sites.
Well, how do you know that these are fake? I mean, you know, that's the problem with UFO investigators. We have to try to separate the wheat from the chaff, find out which is phony, which is real.
No attribution. These are always, and I mean 100% of the time, YouTube videos with no attribution. No attribution.
By that you mean?
How in the world does one website come up with the original content on one unbelievable video after another?
Mm.
They make them.
Yeah.
That's how.
Okay. So these things have to be, some video analyst has to look at them. And have you had, for example, this woman, this Open Your Eyes, have you had that video analyzed? Or are you an analyst?
No, I am not.
Okay.
And the bigger issue, David, is the inability of the mainstream media to approach anomalous phenomena that is indeed unexplainable, such as, in other words, other than it's a UFO craft with aliens in it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to take the nebulous step that there are people who might be able to put miracles into the sky. You know, were you familiar with Dean Clark in Kentucky in 2008? He was, MUFON went out to his place. He was putting all kinds of objects into visual sight structure for people to look at and photograph.
How was he doing this?
Well, he again was another very religious man, very systematic in how he was calling these things. And as I said in one of my blog posts, the last thing the media wants is a million magicians running around. The last thing we need is to know that our neighbor Harry can walk out and produce sky entertainment for us.
Mm-hmm.
That's just too scary.
Okay, but you're saying that this is a magic trick, are you not? Are you saying...
If you want to call it that, I would say, David, that he's calling the subspace. In other words, our not able to be, which runs off into the able to not be,
okay,
is set up by it,
okay,
is using its own intentionalities, expectations,
okay,
the whole belief system thing.
Okay, so you're saying a lot of this is not hoaxed.
It's not hoaxed.
It's not hoaxed.
Temporal phenomena.
All right. Okay. And now I'm on the same page with you. But you seem to be saying that this third phase of the moon is hoaxed.
As I said, this Robert Bingham was, in my opinion, most likely just looking for a way to get his information out. And wanted to link in with somebody that was going to give, as I said, most of these orb callers, most of these videos that I find, they might have 30 views, 50 views, 100 views, depending on how popular they are.
Mm.
They don't have many views. Third phase of the moon, everything they put out has 100,000 views.
Mm.
So this guy, obviously wanted to get his idea that angels could be called into the sky out.
Okay. So do you feel that the third phase of the moon is hoaxed or mostly hoaxed?
Well, it had a real crappy reputation until him, in my opinion.
Hmm.
So, you kind of have to view that how you want to.
I see. Well, I do know that there's a lot of hoaxes out there on YouTube, and I'll be looking at some things that are very, very compelling. And then all of a sudden, I'll click on something, and it's an obvious hoax,
Mm-hmm.
And it's just very bad videotography. And then
many of your guests, especially in the last year or so, talked about the sky noise phenomena?
I did. I did have one show where I brought that subject up. I even recorded a few of these noises off the web. And played it for our listeners.
And supposedly, your area there is a hotbed for it.
In
Detroit, Windsor.
In Windsor, I know that there was something going on, and several nights They covered this on the news in Windsor, but I did not hear anything.
Right.
I'm in the Trenton. I live in the Trenton area, Trenton, Michigan, just south of Detroit. So I don't know how far these noises go, but you know, it sounds like train whistles or creaking metal rusty doors. It's just
there's a variety of sounds. The most common one is not a very glamorous one. It's just a low hum. But,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. What's your take on that?
Well, again, I hate to say this, but
go ahead.
on at least three occasions in the summer, not this summer, but last summer, my wife and I were laying in bed in the summer with the windows open at night. And I'm talking, and now I live in Atlanta. I live in the busiest airport in the world.
Okay.
But there's not a lot of traffic after midnight or 1. And like at 2 in the morning, you know, you'd hear this, you know, that just went on and on, just very low hum. And my thoughts, I'm thinking, how in the world do they intend to get away with this? You know, I mean, how many people could possibly hear this in the Atlanta area? Which made me believe that, you know, it has to be maybe isolated or localized in some sort of a way. And it wasn't loud enough to really even draw attention, but...
annoying.
Yeah, just weird. You know, and I don't really have a take on it. I do have a take, kind of another additional take on one of the more weird things of a recent past. And I'm talking last month with the Verge Tube UFO.
Verge Tube.
Out of Verge, Kentucky?
No, nope, haven't heard of it.
It's a good one. Again, it came through MUFON. A multi-hour lit-up tube-like structure up above Verge, Kentucky. Seen really in a pretty wide area. There were multiple reports on MUFON. And... what was funny is, it got picked up. I mean, it was, you know, media was talking about it and so forth, was the fact that they didn't mention that this guy who took the video and who took the stills and so forth is, you know, another very religious man. And what he thought that these tube lights looked like, and boy, once you get told what they are, it's not hard to see. He thought they were scrolls. Now, he's looking for end times, of course. People are going to be reading tea leaves very heavily over the next couple weeks.
Like the flying scrolls in the Bible.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah.
And I would have, you know, suggest, I believe it was on October 16th or October 18th that I first covered the Verge thing on my blog.
But, how are we spelling Verge?
V-I-R-G-I-E.
V-I-R-G-I-E, Verge,
right.
Okay.
Verge, Kentucky.
Okay, I'm going to look that up.
You'll love it. It is really, I mean, talk about, you know, wanting to read tea leaves into these final 3 weeks. Now, I realize you'll be airing this afterwards. But.
Yeah, yeah. Toward the 21st of December, right?
Well, that's what I'm referring to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Of course. Yeah, this airs in January. So if our listeners are listening to this, we made it, guys. Okay.
It's kind of like when I was doing some research at a Lexington radio station in the '80s, and they had a psychic, you know, on their show, on their Sunday morning show or whatever, and. One of the recommendations I had to make, you know, they wanted to shed their heavy metal image and so forth. It was Q95 or Q98. Anyway, was, you know, it's psychic had to go. And, you know, I immediately, after we had said the words, I go, he probably already knows it.
I had to tease this. I went to, Laughlin, Nevada, for Open Minds convention.
Yeah.
And
I'll bet you that was cool.
Oh, yeah. This was a couple of years ago, though, and this woman gets on the bus and, you know, from the Vegas airport going to Laughlin, and she sits down, And she's talking about the fact that she's psychic. And then she realizes after a minute she's on the wrong bus. And as she's as she gets off, I say to the guy next to me, if she was truly psychic, she would have known that in the first place.
Yep.
Oh, be nice,
that's,
Dave.
I guess that's a joke that the psychics have to,
or have to put
deal
up with
all
right.
the time.
Rick Phillips, where can our listeners go to check out your website again?
My website is UFO Disclosure Countdown Clock at blogspot.com, but it will come up just the other way. And I would like to say that my books, I have four UFO books in particular. I have nine books totally.
Right.
I use my author name of H.R. Phillips.
Okay.
And mainly because there's a guy who's been known before I came up on, Richard Phillips, who writes about UFOs and so
right.
forth.
Okay. And they can get that through Amazon or whatever, right?
Right. They're all Kindle books.
Rick, I appreciate you coming on, but I'm afraid we're going to have to go now. And
listen, I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And if our listeners have any questions or comments for me, you can email me at dtwitchell@hotmail.com. This show, as well as all the forum shows, is now archived at whfr.fm's website. Click on Talk Shows on the homepage, and then Tuesday Forum. We Are Not Alone is also archived at my website, which is ufoimplications.com. And please stay tuned to whfr.fm, the station making waves, for the best in alternative programming. And I want to thank you for joining us today. Please join us again the first Tuesday of each month at 1 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UFO phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.
WHFR Dearborn.
FCC. For details, check out the HFCC website. It's hfcc.edu. That's hfcc.edu. Or give me a call, WHFR's Susan McGraw, at 313-845-9842. That's 313-845-9842. Welcome.
Here's the Sonata No. 8 by Henry Purcell with the Purcell Quartet.